hello, hello, and welcome to the College of Creation. My name is Dan.
And my name is Michael.
And we are Dungeons & Dragons DMs who love to homebrew items, spells, creatures, and features for 5th edition D&D. How you doing today, Michael?
I'm doing very well. How are you today?
I'm good. Really excited to see what we both came up with for this week's prompt, but I'm sure we will have plenty to talk about. I'm also excited to see if we decided to come up with basically the same exact thing, which...
It's happened before. It could happen again.
I'm sure
it will. Dan, would you like to remind our listeners of what our prompt was from last week?
Absolutely. Let's see. Last time around, we rolled up on our random table for all of the prompts, for all of the homebrew things that we can make. And from Kyle on the Discord, we have a feat for monks. That was the prompt
Thanks,
that was
Kyle.
Given to us. Thank you, Kyle. Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Some sort of feat for monks. He specifically was talking about that monks are a little bit... underpowered sometimes feel a little bit like they're pigeonholed that some sort of buff through a feat might be a good way to approach that problem. If you'd like to leave us a prompt that we can make something out of in the future, you can email us at collegeofcreationpod@gmail.com. Throw us those prompts for all kinds of things that you'd like to see made.
Yes, please email us. You can also find us on TikTok at Michael Barlos or at Sir Dr. K.
I had a really interesting experience building this week's prompt, Michael. I don't know if you did as well, but I went down sort of a couple different rabbit holes, and I started with one idea, and then I kind of expanded out a fair bit into more things, but it got me thinking about my process. It got me thinking about like how I approach a problem like the prompt that we have here. It made me think of a question that I'd love to bring to you. If we're talking about this podcast, this show, and this project of experimentation and creativity as a way to give advice and guidance to those DMs and GMs out there who might be interested in dipping a toe into homebrew, you know, starting to try to create their own mechanics, their own game design for the world. It's hard to know where to start. And I think that prompts are really good for that for me. I love having something that's like, okay, this is the problem and this is how I'm going to try to figure it out. But I do think that like there are a lot of things that you can run into along the way. And I'd love to know what your take is on this. What do you think and what do you see as the biggest sort of stumbling blocks or pitfalls for new people who are trying to homebrew, yourself included, you know, the kinds of things that you ran into when you were starting?
That's a very good question. I have an immediate answer, and then I think it also has a more layered response as well. My immediate answer is structure. One of my biggest pet peeves when I'm looking at homebrew online is seeing a seemingly complete thing, whatever they're making, and then every detail about it is wrong. It's like, it just mechanically doesn't work. And I think that certainly when I first started getting into making my own things, I ran into this problem all the time where I would make something that I thought was really cool and creatively robust, but it just didn't fit into the game at all because I had everything wrong. I had the wrong level markers for subclasses, or I didn't list the rarity or properties correctly on an item, arranging the stat blocks correctly for a monster, things like that. I think the best thing that you can do when you're starting to homebrew and continuing into, you know, becoming more experienced is read and research and look at things that are already established. That to me is paramount. It's the most important thing you can do, because even if your item or your subclass or your monster or whatever is crazy overpowered or just insufficiently underpowered, if it all makes sense structurally, at least people can apply it to their games and test it out for you and properly use it. that makes it all better. And then everything else can come after that.
Almost like it's the syntax of building. Yeah. It is the basic building blocks of like, how do these things work and how do they interact with each other? From a game design standpoint, you know, I think you're absolutely right. There is a ton of great ideas out there. There are people with incredible concepts, incredible creativity, but without the syntax to actually build it into the game, you make something that like doesn't interact well with the rules of the world and the rules of what you're making. Mm-hmm. And so it is, you're absolutely right. It's very crucial to have that understanding of the syntax of how to build a thing.
And I've written for a couple different sources in my time as a GM or a player in general, and that was always the biggest stress, right, is to get everything mechanically correct. And now that, you know, I've developed a small following on TikTok, you know, people come to me for advice and they ask me, they'll send me things to kind of review and send kind of critique back to them. And that's the biggest thing. I always feel so horrible when people that are really excited about the game, this concept is perfect. I want to play this thing or use this item so badly, but here are all of the things that you need to change first to make it fit into the structure of the game. And I hate discouraging people.
Sure.
But
sure.
That is like the biggest thing that just always sticks out to me.
And let's be fair, for a lot of people, that is sort of the most boring part of homebrewing, right? Is making Absolutely. All of the pieces Absolutely. Fit together. I don't know. It's a hard thing to take, and it is a hard thing to do without just reading. That reading the material is so, so key, because you do start to gain just that language. You start to understand how things are phrased, how things are usually put together in a way that will read in line with everything else around it, so that when it comes to defining order of operations, when it comes to defining how it interacts with other abilities, other skills, like that will be very clear because these things are written in a similar way. And until you really internalize that vocabulary, you know, it's really hard to know if you're doing it right.
And that is the unfortunate part of it, right? Is that if that stuff isn't there, if the syntax isn't in place, it's very easy to not take something seriously. It's really easy to just skip by something and not get the good creative parts of it.
Yeah. I think for me, once you get beyond that sort of first level of syntax, I feel like for me, the most common pitfall that I fell into certainly early days, and the one that I see the most frequently, is so many things being so overstuffed. And it's not even a matter of overpowered, I don't think, to me. It's just too many ideas all at once. And I understand it. I think it's a really good urge to have, right? It means that you have a very keen sense of what the thing you are trying to create is, right? You have such a strong definition in your mind of what it ought to be, that you want to hit every angle of it and make sure that it is perfectly encapsulating that idea, which I think ends up being a huge problem, because let's be real, part of what is so fun about D&D, even the things that exist in the world, even the things that I homebrew, is that I can make it as clear and as specific as possible, but a player can take that and reflavor it. They can reskin it. They should, and they should be able to, right? They should be able to take that thing and be like, I don't want this to be attached to, this world's god of the sun. I want to change it to a different god in a different universe. And so like, you have to leave that wiggle room a little bit. You can't hit every angle of the thing you're trying to capture perfectly.
Right.
Like, I've seen probably a half dozen races that are just overstuffed with features. And it's just like, okay, you want to have an ability score increased. You want to have dark vision. You want to make sure you have keen senses. You want to make sure you have faster movement than the average race. But you also want innate spell casting. And you want additional senses beyond that, because you're trying to capture this single idea. And it's the kind of thing that I did too. I've looked back just today in preparation of talking about this at like some of my earliest subclass creations, and there's so much going on. They have options. Yeah. Like at third level, you can choose all of these options. And I wrote everything my brain could think of. And I am going to run into a problem today where I came up with too many options. And I still run into this thing where I'm like, I want to hit every possible thing, but I need to give my creations room to breathe sometimes.
I think there's a very clear distinction between clarity in mechanics and clarity of the originator's vision for what a subclass could be, or a monster, or a playable species, or whatever it may be. The mechanics have to be nice and clear, and to do that, it can't be overstuffed. You can't have a bunch of numbers in a description for one feature and have that be directly applicable to a game. You know, it has to be a very clear path mechanically. Bloating is a huge issue.
and I think the thing is that, you know, sometimes, unfortunate as it is, like, you do have to fit things into the mechanics. So sometimes the mechanic that might be ideal when it comes to the concept isn't necessarily the same as what mechanic is most ideal when it comes to playing the game. Like, sometimes you want to attach a feature to a skill or an ability score that isn't necessarily in line with the character type or the class or something like that, because it makes sense for the idea, but it doesn't make sense for the class. If you're making like a monk subclass, you don't want to add in features that attach heavily to charisma very often, because monks are already, you know, multi-ability score dependent. And so if you're adding a charisma inside of that thing as well, now you're just confusing the mechanics a little more. It might make sense for what you want to do, but you're going to need to just come up with a story reason or a narrative reason or something else in your brain that allows you to use wisdom instead, because that's what makes sense.
Yeah.
And some understanding of what's going to make sense and some flexibility with your concept is important to actually getting a product that is readable and playable.
It's really tough. It's hard to distill all of the things that are necessary for a truly successful piece of homebrew into a truly successful piece of homebrew.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to find all of these things and condense them into something that is a true finished product. There are a lot of hurdles.
Yeah.
I would say mostly roadblocks, actually. There's very few clear paths to the finish line as far as homebrew is concerned.
True enough.
Anytime I have any type of homebrew piece that I'm working on and something doesn't fit, or I just have to sacrifice a part of it, I just keep it. I just have a whole document full of ideas that just didn't make the cut, and I'll put them in later. Because I know eventually something will come along that I'll need to make something new for, and that's the first document I go to. It's like, what nugget, what kernel of an idea do I have in here that I can just, I already have the basic idea for, I'm going to slot something in from here now.
I'm going to tell you, that is a super hot tip, to have a document or a notepad or something that's just full of like, just individual mechanics or individual like core ideas for like, this could be slotted into something, because
almost failed ideas. I think that's the title of my document, is my almost failed ideas.
I do love that so much. Cause yeah, I can't tell you how many times I came up with like a single idea, but it wasn't enough to like build a full thing around. It was just like, this is something maybe, it would be great to have a little space to put that aside and then, be able to remember it later. So we have similar thoughts about like what is hard to do here, but we do have different approaches, you know, and I think both approaches can certainly work. Yeah. And I'd love to know, how did your approach work this week?
So all of that being said, this is the outlier, because this was the one week. This is the week that I really struggled to way overblow the idea. I started very small and then I restarted very small, and then I scrapped that, and I restarted very small again. And I came across... So are you familiar at all with the 12 powers of man?
I am not. What is that?
Okay, so there is a spiritual belief system called the 12 powers of man. It's been established for Unity Church, which is kind of a countrywide belief system that revolves around the spirituality of higher beings and things like that. It's very monk-esque, right? It's not mainlining a deity's power like a cleric or a paladin. It is finding oneness within yourself and within your community. Mm-hmm. That's the okay, main deal for it.
Yeah, that feels like a monk.
Yes. So there are 12 powers. They all correspond with a month in the calendar year. So we have faith, strength, wisdom, love, power, imagination, understanding, will, order, zeal, release, and life. And those all correspond with months, January through December. Okay. So I made a monk feat for each of those, which I'll share with you now. I'll share the file. I had a very difficult time getting to this finishing point, but once I started thinking about things in terms of, you know, this cyclical kind of perception of the universe, what monk features could I fit into that under these headings? So I have things like the Blessing of Faith, which allows resistance to all bludgeoning damage, and your slow fall ability eliminates falling damage completely. Instead of just the partial reduction of fall damage, it takes it out completely. We have the Blessing of Order, which it just says your patient defense no longer requires key expenditure, things like that. I kind of worded it so that it could be taken as a feat if you'd like, or you could, if your DM allows, kind of imbue one of these blessings into an item and use an attunement slot for it as well. So you could take it, you know, every ASI level if you'd like, and then have three of them on items if you want to sacrifice magic items.
Yeah.
So you could have up to, what is it, seven? Seven?
Yeah.
Of these by level 18 for a monk?
That's very cool. I think this concept is really great. To root this in something approximating a real-world belief system that does feel more monastic than mm-hmm. clerical or druidic or anything like that, it feels more close to the monk's self-realization and oneness of self and all of that. Like, that feels like it ties really well here, and I love all of them being sort of tied to a single concept. Let me just read through some of these because I think they're really interesting. And I also love the idea that you could take it as a feat. You could get this as sort of a blessing from like a quest reward situation where, like, you know, if you are working with a monastery or if you're playing a monk character that needs to like go through something major and getting one of these as part of the reward out of it would be huge. That would be very cool.
Absolutely.
And would represent something about what you just went through. The Blessing of Wisdom, a blessing of the galvanized consciousness. Whenever you roll a natural one on a wisdom-based skill check, you regain one key point. I love that, like, utilizing the negativity back in a positive way and, like, that resilience that sort of represents feels mechanically really solid and also fits with monk sort of vibes again.
I think there are not enough in the game as a whole, not enough mechanics that rely on nat ones. Obviously failures and, you know, two death saves instead of one, things like that that are overwhelmingly negative, but things that just shift in a mechanic that are more neutral on a nat one, because there are plenty of them on a nat 20, you know, getting a crit on a 19 and 20 or whatever. There are plenty of things attached to success and too few things that are attached to abject failure.
Yeah, I mean, you've got the Blessing of Life here, of course, a Blessing of the Resolute Heart. Your hit point total increases by an additional 2 with each monk level you take. You also make constitution checks and saving throws with advantage. I mean, that's huge, obviously. That's super cool. And, like, plays with the tough feat a little bit differently, right? It's not
monastic
just
tough.
The tough feat.
Yeah.
It has this additional sort of, like, because you're a monk, that idea of life mm-hmm. and increased life force is, you know, just a little bit more powerful, or gives you a little bit of a benefit for also being a monk for this, which is so cool. Yeah, I just think the concept really fits so neatly. And I'm really glad that you landed on something that, like, feels so very concise and feels like it was almost meant to be.
Yeah, it's very monastic, like you said. Yeah. I'm a huge believer in narrative leveling and storytelling through, you know, milestone leveling. And these are the things that I would think about if I had a monk character of my own, or if I had a monk at my table.
I will say the other thing about it is that it's not fully dissimilar to mine.
I figured anything that's just a single thing, as subclasses are really easy to deviate once you get past you know, the base level. Anything like one item or one feat, I predicted that we would have something similar.
I think the problem, though, is that both of us came up with one or two feats, maybe, and then we just sort of started to be like, maybe this needs to be more than just one thing. Maybe this needs to be a dozen things.
A series of things, yeah.
So I am going to send you this here. It's not so much a feat as it is a feature for monks that functions more like Eldritch Invocations than like a feat, exactly.
Okay.
This is the monk feature Monastic Technique, which in the tradition of Tasha's Cauldron of Everything would be a replacement feature to replace the automatic gain of Stunning Strike at fifth level. Now, Stunning Strike is a wonderful feature. Monks love it so much. It's great. But I do feel like it pigeonholes monks into being a stun machine. And that's all you do.
Yeah, Stunning Strike and nothing else. Yeah.
You're just going to burn all of your key points on Stunning Strike every single time. And by the time you get up to, you know, whatever level where you have a million attacks, you can just do a Stunning Strike on all of them, but you run through key points so fast that way. Which is sort of, it's fun, but it also is sort of unfortunate for monks to have key points, which they need to spend for everything they do, but also to only have like a couple of things that are like so core and necessary to their class that they will always be spending their key points on that one thing. That was my first thought, was like, I want to mess with that a little bit. I want to undo that idea that like you kind of have to pick the most effective thing to do with that thing. And 90% of the time, stun is gonna be the thing. However, there are other options. My first thought was a feat that allows you to specialize in something. So my first one was something that I called Key Specialist. You choose one monk feature that uses key points, and the key point cost of that feature is reduced by one for you. That was the whole thing that I built at first. That's it.
Reduction in key points.
And it was fine.
We love.
Yeah, and it also, like, again, it's called Key Specialist because the intention is that you can take that feat as a monk and you can always be disengaging as a bonus action without spending a key point. It gives you a little bit of that dip into rogue without doing that, but it also means that, like, now your style of play isn't just rush in and stunning strike. Now your style of play is maybe a little bit different. And so
I love these.
That's fun. Okay, all of that is to say, that was the first thing I came up with, and then I thought, you know what? That's not enough. I should make some more of these things. And then I started to make more of them. And I was like, you know, if what I'm doing is trying to increase the versatility of a monk, I want to give the player agency over how that versatility comes up. So that I'm not just making three feats that make you a better monk and you have to take all three and then you're better. So then I was like, okay, what else lets you do that? Well, Eldritch Invocations let you add versatility in the way that you want to make yourself versatile. If you don't want to take any of the Eldritch Blast invocations and you want to take all of the ones that make you better at talking to people, better at persuading and deceiving and all of that stuff, it's going to push you into a different lane. It's going to push you into a different playstyle. And I want that for monks who often, to me, feel very pigeonholed. So, this feature would replace Stunning Strike, and at 5th level, you get to choose from this list of, I think it's like 20, monastic techniques. You learn an additional monastic technique at 9th level, and an additional one at 13th level. Some of them have level prerequisites, some of them have other prerequisites, but they run the gamut from allowing you to, for instance, the very first one, Adept Defense. When you use your Patient Defense feature, you gain advantage on all saving throws until your next turn. In addition, you have things like other options other than Stunning Strike, where you can trigger different saving throws. You can apply different effects, things like Draining Strike. When you hit another creature with a melee weapon attack, you can spend one key point to drain vitality from your target. You regain hit points equal to half the amount of damage dealt by your attack. So you're still doing that thing where Stunning Strike allows you to make a melee weapon attack and add an additional consequence to it.
And it should be noted that even though this feature replaces Stunning Strike, you did list Stunning Strike as an option. So
Of course I did. Why wouldn't I? You have to.
Which is wonderful. Which is wonderful. So if a GM adopts this feature in place of that, a player that is playing a monk can still be a Stunning Strike machine if they want to.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And also have two other options for a path they'd like to follow. Some of these are, all of them are great, but some of them, you know that I like to find holes and figure out ways to do things that are not necessarily inherent to the class that's trying to do them. The two that stick out to me are Sand Trick and Sleeper Hold. I love both of them so much. Sand Trick, you can use one of your attacks on your turn to spend a key point and toss sand in a 15-foot cone extending from you. Each creature in the area must make a dexterity saving throw or be blinded until the end of your next turn. That's so cool. Nobody else can do that. Maybe Druid and Ranger-ish, but like that's such a monk thing. Like, I'm going to blind you and then go in and wail on you with five punches.
Yeah,
that's
maybe you're a sneaky monk that way. There are monks who would never use that because that's dishonorable. You know, I think it would be weird to take Sand Trick, for instance, and then also take Honorable Presence, which you gain proficiency in wisdom saving throws. Additionally, when you make a charisma check, you can spend one key point to gain a bonus to the check equal to your wisdom modifier, which is a more RP-focused skill. It sort of implies an honorable, like, upright, very charismatic sort of force of personality that Sandtrick, I guess, could work along with it, but you'd be kind of a sneaky little monk guy, which is fine. I wanted to add in, some RP-focused skills, some exploration-focused skills, things like monastic observation. You gain proficiency in the perception skill if you don't already have it. In addition, you can use wisdom instead of intelligence whenever you make an investigation check, and you can't be surprised while you are conscious. So it plays with parts of other feats, but doesn't give you the full feat, but also allows you some more exploration.
Monastic alert.
Yeah, exactly. It's slightly different. It's different enough to make it feel like it's a monk's thing. The thing is that I could come up with probably another half dozen or more of these, but I do think it's got potential to be the kind of thing that I just add in as standard practice for monks in my games, just to say like, hey, if you want Stunning Strike, you can take it. But I have all these other things that will allow you to maybe make a character that feels more true to the way that you want to play the game.
I think this is very similar in focus to your sorcerer, where it can build as you play the game.
Yeah,
I would love to see this in play with a person that's a monk. Maybe even a person that loves playing monks and usually plays monks. Like, that would be the optimal person I would love to try this on and see where their character takes them and what they would like to see added to this list. You know, like in play, they come up with an opportunity to do something and there isn't a feat on this list that covers that. And they could say, hey, we're in this situation. It'd be very cool to have this type of thing added to that list, to have monks be more of a Swiss Army knife type of thing rather than just Stunning Strike and Unarmed Strike over and over and over again.
Yeah. Because I feel like there is an aspect to the monk archetype that gets sort of lost in actual play. And I think your creation hit on it as well, this idea of personal oneness, this idea of self-discovery and interiority that comes with being a monk that doesn't really get explored because monks sort of just turn into you're an unarmed fighter.
Yeah.
And I wish there was more versatility to it. And I wish there was more things that I added onto this that allow some more of that RP potential and some more, mechanical rewards for RPing that particular part of the monastic archetype.
Sure.
Yeah, I think it's got room to grow, like you said, but I'm pretty pleased with it, all told. I'm pretty happy to hand this off to the monk character that I have and be like, hey, when we hit fifth level, go ham.
Go for it, yeah. So this is great. I really like this a lot. It feels Thank good. You. It feels... It fits into the class really well. The levels that you picked make sense. You know, not level 9 and level 13 are not like crazy unattainable levels at the end of the game where you're waiting to take these features and you never get there because your game falls off or anything. Like that's it just feels very solid. It is an improvement to the monk class for sure.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
As we are with sorcerers and barbarians, we're very aligned in our idea of what monks are and what they should or could be. So these first three prompts have been very nice because we all kind of, both have a similar idea of where we're going, but I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing.
No. I think we could, we will definitely hit, I'm sure, some prompts that have a little more wiggle room and stuff that gives us the opportunity to maybe really go in wildly different directions. We just happened to come up with really similar ideas for these last handful. At least for the barbarian and the monk stuff was just like we brain synergized pretty hard there. But I think you're right. I think it's because we both recognized maybe a gap in what is there and the opportunity for something to be added that just creates a little more versatility in the case of the monks.
The thing that is absent from the monk class is the sort of central order where the flavor is there when you describe a monk, but the actual playability of that order is very gray.
Yeah.
You know, and I think maybe it's because D&D is more combat centric, especially in 5e. So that pulls away from a lot of the narrative flavorful stuff that can be applied to monks.
Yeah.
Rangers fall into the same trap where they're more exploration based. And in combat, they're still very viable, but they get overlooked for right, fighters or clerics or druids instead. Monks have that opening. They have that window. And we both looked through the same window today.
But I really love how yours centers around this idea of these 12 things. I can't say it. I know I've already harped on it, but I really think it's very cool. And it's the kind of thing that like my brain looks at it and immediately thinks, oh, I can make lore out of this. I can turn this into a whole monastic order that like has these 12 pillars. You could play a monk. You could do a subclass that's almost based around this, or you could put a backstory that's based around this idea just for the exclusive purpose of trying to take on these feats and doing only that over the course of a campaign. Mm-hmm. Like, that is so cool that you can build lore out of a thing like this so easily.
My goal is absolute oneness.
I love
when I achieve all 12 blessings, I will be a full monk.
It's incredibly, incredibly anime, which is so cool.
It's so anime.
That's so good. Trying to get all 12 blessings. Got to catch them all, baby.
Yeah.
I love it. That's so good. All I want from any feature ever is for it to really seamlessly work into my narrative brain, which this does.
I agree. Thank you, man. And yours does as well.
Thank you.
Historically, I've always valued options for players and for their characters over anything else. I think it just adds to the fluidity of the game. It makes everything more diverse. You could have a party full of monks and they could all be different if you use your feature over Stunning Strike. And it's a great expansion.
I appreciate it. I really appreciate it. Hey there, listeners. If you have an idea for what you would want to do for a monk feat, you should let us know because we clearly came up with the exact same idea. Okay, not really. But we did come up with pretty similar concepts, but I'm sure there is some gap. There's something somewhere that we missed, and we'd love to hear from you. Did you have a better idea for this than we did? Let us know. Again, you can email us, collegeofcreationpod@gmail.com, or you can reach out to either of us on TikTok, as long as that remains a thing, at Michael _Barlos and at Sir Dr. K. Michael, would you like to roll for our prompt for next week?
I would love to, yeah. Let's get some dice out here.
Beautiful. I've got the table pulled up and ready.
We're looking at a 15 today.
15. Ooh, a 15 is a TikTok special. You might have seen this one going around, but I did, and I added it to this list. Our friend MixelPixel on TikTok asked a question a little while ago, asking for people to say what they would make for an item called Fighter's Block. You saw this one?
I love it. Yeah.
All right. So we are going to be making fighter's blocks on our next episode here. It's going to be so good. It's going to be so incredible. Yeah. I'll be honest. I saw this video come across my feed and I think I liked it. I favorited it. I was like, I will come up with something for that. Never did. Never did.
Same.
So I have no clue what I'm going to do. But it will be a fun experiment. So thanks, MixelPixel. We appreciate you.
Absolutely. Well, Dan, this has been a fantastic bit of homebrew. I loved your submission. I had a lot of fun making mine. And I look forward to making some items, some fighter block items for next week.
Yeah, I loved yours as well. I really appreciate the work you put in there. Seems like a lot of fun. And that's going to do it for us here at the College of Creation. Class dismissed. You got anything you want to say to the people before we say goodbye, Michael?
I always have something that I want to say to the people before I say goodbye. Hey, if you're out there and you're thinking, man, I would love to start playing D&D, but I've never done it before, do it. There are a million free resources online. There's an absolutely amazing resource called startplaying.games, which Dan is a part of.
Ooh.
You could find him on that website, and he could run a game for you. You don't have to know how to play. You don't have to know how to DM. You don't have to know how to homebrew. All you have to do is show up.
Yeah.
And I promise, if you've wanted to play D&D or a TTRPG before, and you just show up and you have the desire to learn, it will be a positive experience. So just go for it. Just do it.
1,000,000%. Go to your local game store. They probably have game nights. Go on and start playing games. It's also great. You can go on to Reddit, r/LFG is looking for a group or looking for a game. Go find a game in your area and start playing because it's such a fun time.
Wonderful thing. Until next time, Dan, to the listeners, be good to yourselves and have a great day.
Hey y'all, thanks for listening to this episode of the College of Creation. If you want to see our creations from this episode and all our past episodes, you can find those for free on our Patreon page at patreon.com/collegeofcreationpod. And if you decide you want to become a patron, you'll also automatically get access to any revised versions of these creations, plus our patron Discord and bonus chats with Michael and me where we just talk about anything and everything D&D. We play games, we have a good time. You can send your homebrew prompts and questions to collegeofcreationpod@gmail.com. Our music is by Fuser Wolf. You can check out his tunes on Bandcamp and Spotify. Thanks again all for listening, and we will see you right here again next week.